Exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/ducks for exclusive promotions. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
Coast to coast, nonstop action. This is the premier source for National Hockey League news, scores, highlights, and the Anaheim Ducks. It's time to Light the Lamp with Alexis Downey.
Welcome into another episode of Light the Lamp. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Scott Wheeler, who is the national reporter for The Athletic, covering the NHL draft and prospects. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time in your busy week. How are you doing today?
Yeah, this is crunch time. I got back, we were sort of chatting before we hopped on here, but I got back from the Memorial Cup in Saginaw late last night. I'm home for 24 hours here to do some laundry, and then I'm back to Buffalo for the combine to sort of close out this week. And before we know it, we will be in Vegas for the last, sadly, the last centralized draft. So I'm looking forward to the home stretch here over the next couple of weeks.
With this time of the year, I mean, certainly so busy for you, but how is it just going into the draft, going about, you know, each of these events leading up to it? What's it look like for you?
It's really just sort of finishing touches. The legwork gets done in the fall and through the winter. And by legwork, I mean getting out to the CHL and USHL top prospects games, spending some time seeing some college games. Obviously, I'm based out of Toronto, so seeing as many OHL games as I can, World Juniors, Frozen Four, all of that. And then this is sort of phone calls. This is just sort of touching base with agents, with the players themselves, their families. I get to tell their stories on top of doing the scouting side of my job. I get to tell their stories throughout the year. So get to build relationships with a lot of their family members, skating coaches that these guys work with, strength coaches that these guys work with. So it's really leaning on those networks right now to make sure that, A, my list is buttoned up and I've got everybody where I want them. But B, just even checking in on guys and their health and whether they're going to be participating in the combine and draft chatter for my mock drafts and that kind of a thing about teams that are interested in particular players. So that's what June is about, really. It's about getting on the phone as much as possible and making sure that I've not just sort of mastered my list in terms of getting my final list out, which came out yesterday, but also just sort of crossing my T's, dotting my I's, that kind of thing on homework, on sourcing, all of it.
Yeah, I definitely want to ask you about that final ranking list that you put out yesterday, especially on the top end of that. A lot of defensemen, especially as you mentioned in your top nine there. How did you kind of go about the list this year in terms of just making the decision to see some of those players higher up than maybe more recent years?
Yeah, it's interesting this year in particular, just because of the D. This is a unique draft. You really have to go back to 2012 and 2008 to find comparable drafts where you're seeing the number of D that are likely going to be top 10 picks. 2008 obviously has produced several Hall of Famers. 2012 less so. 2012 was the year of Nail Yakupov and Alex Galchenyuk, two forwards at the very top. But then beyond them, the story of that 2012 draft was Matt Dumba, Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm. It was the defenseman. And I think this draft is going to be viewed in a similar light. Now, Macklin Celebrini is going to become a star player in a way that Nail Yakupov didn't. So that's going to be different at the very top of the draft. But beyond Macklin Celebrini, I believe that the story of this draft class 5-10 years from now is going to be a story of five or six star level defensemen that I think this group is likely to produce. So you talk about that group of top nine. I've got five defensemen in my top nine at The Athletic. I've got six defensemen in my top 13. A year ago this time, there were really only one or two players in the 2023 draft class that I considered in that kind of a range. So to have that number tripled speaks to just the depth and the quality of those defensemen. And then as far as putting together the list goes, it's harder with D, frankly. Defensemen are harder to project. They're harder to study. It's harder to identify what makes a good defenseman good defensively. The offensive side of the game, we can all watch. We can all understand what makes Zane Parekh in this draft class, for example, what makes Zane special offensively. You see all of the plays that he's making. You see the way that he thinks the game, the skill level, the shot. It's the defensive side of the game that's harder for every evaluator to sort of parse through. How well is a guy defending and what does that look like in today's NHL? And certainly the way the game's trending, it seems like blue lines, and at least the ones that are very successful, are much bigger now than they were sort of 5-6 years ago. I think of the blue line in Tampa Bay that they constructed, the blue line in Vegas that they constructed, even the one in St. Louis. When St. Louis had its special run, it was about length and skating. And in this draft class, there's also plenty of that. There are two very high-end sort of 6 foot, 5'11 defensemen in Zane Parekh and Zeev Boyum. But there are also some big, big defenders in Anton Salaev, Sam Dickinson, who played for the London Knights at the Memorial Cup just this weekend. Artem Levshunov at Michigan State. These are big, big kids. All three of them are 6'3 and above. They can all really skate. Skating is a premium asset for all three of those players. So then you start to sort of balance the offensive types against maybe players who look a little bit more like how the NHL blue or most NHL blue lines look these days, which is that length and skating element. So it's been a tricky process with this group, but all five of the defensemen in that top nine that you hinted at, I'm a big believer in. I think all five of them have a chance to be first pairing type defensemen in the NHL. And I very rarely say that about D at that age.
Mm-hmm. When you first started looking at this draft class, were you seeing these young defensemen that were upcoming and that you thought, oh, they could be in the, you know, the top picks of this draft?
Certainly, Artem Levshunov coming into this year was viewed as one of the two or three better prospects in this draft. Sam Dickinson was viewed likewise as kind of a top 10 pick. There are others who have really joined that group, though. Zeev Boyum, for example, who I mentioned. Zeev was played 2 years at the national program, was at Denver this year, won a national championship with Denver, and really emerged as this season progressed. At the NTDP, he was actually usurped by Cole Hutson, a younger player on that blue line in terms of offensive zone opportunities, power play time, that kind of a thing. Coming into this year, Zeev was viewed kind of as a 20s or 30s guy, a late first round pick. And then over the course of the season, his play at Denver, playing top pairing minutes for a championship team, his play at the World Juniors, where he became really the fourth member of a top four for Team USA that won gold at the World Juniors. That was a big deal for him. And then suddenly the conversation began to change. He also grew a couple of inches. Zeev was kind of 5'10 a year ago. Now he's 6 feet, 6'1", depending on which listing you look at. We're going to get updated listings at the combine this week, which will be nice. And now Zeev is a surefire top 10 pick. And same token, Anton Salaev, who is a 6'7" Russian who can really skate. Salaev wasn't in the first round conversation heading into this year. And then he made Torpedo and didn't just make Torpedo in the KHL, which is a strong KHL program, but played big minutes out of the gate, was on the power play to start the year. And then suddenly people got really excited about this towering, massive defenseman who had kind of come out of a little bit out of left field to become a top prospect in this draft. So there are guys who've been around, guys who've been name prospects over the last couple of years, but a player like Zeev and a player like Anton Salaev in particular, those two guys really climbed lists very quickly in this draft class to emerge in that sort of top 10 group, if you will.
With Salaev, you had in a mock draft the Ducks taking him at that third pick. How do you see him potentially fitting in with Anaheim?
Well, I think in the aftermath of the Jamie Drysdale for Cutter Gauthier trade, there's naturally a hole to fill now on the blue line. Mm-hmm. Now, certainly, Pavel Mintyukov stepped up big this year as a rookie. I expect that Olin Zellweger will be a big part of the team next year. Olin obviously played for Canada at the Men's Worlds, which I think was another important step for him. Tristan Luno, if his health can get sorted and squared away, I think has a real opportunity to join a Ducks blue line of the future. But it does feel like outside of those three guys, they could use another premium asset in terms of the youth movement on the blue line, more so than they could up front, where they've now added Cutter Gauthier and Leo Carlson and Mason McTavish and company, and they've got a really strong nucleus up front already. So Salaev makes a lot of sense that way, not only because he's very different than those three players I mentioned. Zellweger's obviously the high-end skater, the small sort of I say small in height, but not in strength. He's actually a really, really strong kid. Mm-hmm. But just different player types. Mintyukov was always sort of an offensive type. Salayev, if he's going to hit, if he's going to become as good as some scouts believe he can, and there are scouts who believe that Anton Salayev is the second best prospect in this draft class, it's going to be for his defense. Certainly he played the power play in the KHL and that was a notch in his belt, but it's his length and his skating and his defensive upside that really gets people excited. And so the idea of a Salayev playing alongside a Mintyukov mm-hmm. or alongside an Olin Zellweger, that's where I think the appeal would be for the Ducks in terms of a fit at number three.
And just a reminder that we have exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/Ducks for exclusive promotions. G-O-E-T-T-L, we make comfort easy to spell. Looking at the rest of your rankings, you know, when you came down to making that final decision for each of those players, was there anyone that kind of surprised you over the year that really moved up in your rankings or maybe is kind of an underdog going into the draft?
The two that really come to mind are TJ Ginla, and certainly that last name will be a familiar one for any hockey fan. Mm-hmm. But TJ Ginla and Beckett Senecky with the Oshawa Generals, Tej with the Kelowna Rockets. Tej was a top prospect coming into the WHL, and then last year played on, frankly, one of the deepest teams in WHL history at forward in the Seattle Thunderbirds, who won the WHL title, went to the Memorial Cup final, and lost. As a 16-year-old on that team, which had almost upwards of 10 drafted forwards. As a 16-year-old on that team, he was often a healthy scratch. When he was in the lineup, he played a limited role. And as a result, coming into his draft year, nobody really knew what to make of TJ Ginla. Then he gets traded from Seattle in the WHL to the Kelowna Rockets in the WHL, and he takes off. He was one of the more dynamic offensive players in junior hockey this year in Canada. He was scoring highlight reel goals, playing with speed, playing with skill. He's got a clear NHL shot. All of those things began to pop, and he rose sort of really steadily, and not just steadily, but sharply throughout the year, to the point now where TJ Ginla might be a top 10 pick in this draft class. So he's one that comes to mind. And then the other one is Beckett Senecky. Beckett is a kid who, coming out of junior or minor hockey in Ontario, was also a top prospect, a lot like Tej was. He was actually a very productive player for a low-scoring Oshawa Generals team a year ago. But this year really took off, especially in the second half with Oshawa and into the playoffs, where he was absolutely tremendous. Beckett is a 6'2" winger who is extremely talented. I would grade him as one of the two or three most talented sort of skill players in the draft class, strictly from a puck handling skill perspective. Mm-hmm. He breaks ankles kind of thing. Like, that's his bread and butter, is making guys look silly with the puck on his stick. So that piece of it was really exciting. I think that the size, when you're 6'2" and you've got skill like that, NHL mm-hmm. scouts get really excited. And then to see him really put it all together in the playoffs for the Oshawa Generals and help bring an Oshawa Generals team that wasn't expected to contend this year all the way to the OHL final, where they lost to the London Knights. That was a big deal and a big step forward for Beckett. So Beckett and Tej are both sort of potential top 10, top 15 picks now in this draft class. And that was not the conversation that we were having about them at the start of the year. Certainly in Tej's case, that wasn't part of the conversation. So those are two guys that I would sort of label as risers in this group.
It's always exciting to see how players develop throughout the year and how that can affect, you know, their draft stock moving into the draft. That certainly really a special time in their life as well. But you just mentioned also how you were at the Memorial Cup, Saginaw getting the victory there, one of our Anaheim Ducks prospects, a part of that team, Rodwin Dionisio. Did you get a chance to watch much of his play throughout the tournament?
Yeah, Dionisio was a really important part of that team. They had an excellent blue line, one of the stronger blue lines in the CHL this season. They also had Zane Parekh, one of the mm-hmm. most talented offensive defensemen in the CHL this season. And as a result, Dionisio, who has widely been viewed throughout his junior career as a purely offensive defenseman, had to take on a little bit of a different role. On just about any other team in the CHL, Rodwin would have been a power play one quarterback. on this Saginaw team because of Zane Parekh. He was a power play two quarterback. So just saw his role change. I thought he was still impactful offensively. He was a point per game player in the Memorial Cup. He made some big plays, especially early on in the tournament. I thought his game wasn't maybe quite at its best in the sort of elimination games, if you will. But Dionisio's had a great run here of play over the last two seasons, has obviously emerged to earn himself an entry-level contract with the Ducks a couple of months ago, which is a big deal for him, has been a stud for the Swiss national team internationally and played at the World Juniors and played on some big stages now with the Memorial Cup. I'm a believer in Rodwin. I think at the very least, he's going to be a good part of the AHL franchise. And I think he's got a chance to emerge eventually and sort of challenge for an NHL job. So that's what you hope for out of a mid-round pick, right? That's the goal. Those guys aren't the premium guys. They aren't the Zane Parekhs. But Rodwin has emerged as a legitimate prospect in his own right over the last couple of years. And certainly in the OHL this year was one of the more talented defensemen in the league.
Zane Parekh, I mean, just having such a strong tournament for him at the Memorial Cup. Besides him, who are some of the other prospects that were a part of that were able to go out and, you know, show some more ahead of the draft?
There were really three. The three big draft eligibles in the tournament were Zane and Sam Dickinson, who I've touched on. But the third one was Sam O'Reilly, who was actually a rookie in the OHL this year after playing Junior B a year ago, which has become a bit of a path that the London Knights really like. Instead of bringing players in at 16 into the OHL, they have them spend a year at Junior B. They get to score and play a ton. And then at 17, they step right in and play a bigger role maybe than they would have otherwise with the London Knights in the OHL. And O'Reilly's a great example of that. He's going to be a second round pick, could be an option for the Ducks, a second round pick in the draft. Might be a late first. And I know the Ducks also have a second first round pick as well. And he's a player who could well be in the conversation for either of those selections. Sam's a 6'1" forward, can play center, can play the wing, really, really intelligent player. He made some big plays over the course of the tournament. He went inside out to score a beautiful goal in the round robin and then set up Easton Cowan's game winning goal to send London to the OHL final against Saginaw in the round robin before they again met in the final, obviously. So Sam had a really positive tournament, really strengthened his case as a second round pick, maybe a late first round pick. But those were the three sort of prominent draft eligibles.
I like that you touched on that already, because I was going to ask, you know, the Ducks having so many picks in the first three rounds, four in the first two rounds in general for this year's draft. But, you know, what kind of value do you think Anaheim can get from those early rounds in this year's draft when you look at the class?
Yeah, there's really a clear 17, top 17 that emerged for me in this class. I do think there's a bit of a drop off after those 17. Now, one player in that 17 isn't maybe viewed as a consensus player in that group, and that's Michael Hage. So I think there is an opportunity that Michael Hage, for example, who's in that true top tier for me, could be available in the 20s. But those guys won't linger long. That sort of core group of 17 in this draft that I have at the top of my board, they, outside of Hage, they won't linger long. That's kind of the consensus group, the 14 or 15 especially. After that, though, it is still a decent draft. I wouldn't call it a high-end one. I don't think this draft has the quality of 2023, for example. I don't think this draft certainly doesn't have the quality of 2015, which I view as one of the greatest drafts in NHL history. But it's a decent draft in terms of depth. There will be good players taken in the second round. There will be players available at each of the Ducks' picks that are solid, solid prospects. It's a strong draft at D, and that's not just because of the six that I have at the top. There are more D in my top 100 this year than in any of the 7 years I've been doing this at the Athletic. So that might also speak to maybe it being a little bit weaker at forward and in goal. There is no sort of second round goalie prospect for me. There's normally three or four kids that I view as top two round goalie prospects. That doesn't really exist in this draft class. So it's a little bit weaker in net than usual, and maybe a little bit weaker in forward after Macklin Celebrini than usual. But on defense, there's going to be some legitimate players available throughout. And you're going to see teams, there's going to be an NHL star or two taken in the second round, as there always is.
You mentioned last year's draft, the Ducks taking Leo Carlson. In getting to see how he was able to progress this past season, you know, what did you think about how he integrated into the NHL in his first year?
I thought he handled it really well. It's a big adjustment coming over and jumping right into NHL hockey as a teenager, especially as one who hasn't lived over here. I think people forget the cultural adjustment, everything that comes with moving away from family and all of that. I know he has a girlfriend who is back home, for example, in Leo's case, and I got to know him really well throughout the draft process, and he's just a wonderful kid. So I'll start with that. Mm-hmm. But he really, really impressed me. And I know they treated him maybe a little bit differently than most top prospects when they enter the league. And by that, I mean, almost like a load management style, similar to what we see in the NBA, where they gave him scheduled games off to keep him rested and keep him adjusted. But I thought when he did play, he was impactful. I thought he looked every bit like the top prospect that he was a year ago. And I'm still a big believer that he's going to be a true, true top six player in the NHL for a long, long time and a big part of whatever the Ducks build. So I'm high on Leo. I think he's got a chance to be a regular 60 or 70 point scorer in the NHL. And when you're that kind of a producer and you're also 6'3", 6'4", that's a very valuable player. So I'm excited to see what Leo does with his career. I think he's a great kid and a very, very talented player.
We've certainly enjoyed having him here in Anaheim and are also looking forward to seeing what he can do with the Anaheim Ducks. So you mentioned also, of course, the scouting combine is this week. You're going to be heading there to Buffalo tomorrow. But how much of an impact does that have in some of the decisions that teams and general managers make heading into the draft?
It's a definite piece of the puzzle, more so, I think, the conversations than the actual physical testing. Mm-hmm. I don't think the testing at the NHL Combine translates quite as well to NHL success in, say, the way that the 40-yard dash impacts a running back or a linebacker in the NFL, or the way that wingspan measurements impact an NBA's player ability to play defense. There isn't that one or two tests that really tell you something at the combine. I think part of that is because you can't replicate ice. You can't replicate in a gym setting what true athleticism looks like on the ice. So I think more so it's the interview process. The interview process has changed a lot over the years. A lot of teams are now doing video with players in the room, which I think is a really interesting layer, testing players on the X's and O's of hockey and whether they actually truly watch and understand the game. I think actually, believe it or not, a lot of high-end hockey players haven't grown up really watching hockey. They're so busy playing it that they're not passionate fans of the game. So I think you can learn a lot in the video process, just testing them on what happens next in a play, asking them to remember plays that they made. Those kinds of things, I think, have become telling to teams in terms of that hockey IQ term that we always hear about, right? So there are little things like that teams are now doing in their rooms with players that put players to the test. And there are always there's always a kid or two who really impresses a team in their interview process, and a kid or two that maybe disappoints a team in the interview process. I do have to give the players the benefit of the doubt. It is very hard to sit through. In many cases, some of the players are interviewed by 29 or 30 or 31 of the 32 NHL teams. It's a long week for those kids. They answer a lot of the same questions over and over again. And if I were in their situation, I would be robotic too. So I think it's hard for them to get their personality out there and really sell themselves at times. But it's an interesting week. It's a fascinating look into how NHL teams operate, another opportunity to sort of finalize lists and really get to know the kids on a personal level before you ultimately step up to the stage and take them, right? So I'm looking forward to getting down there, and it's always just a good opportunity to see everybody in the hockey world too. It's one of the only times of the year that everybody's together. So a good opportunity to just shake some hands and catch up with some friends kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
One of the best parts of working in hockey for sure. Scott, I want to ask you about your passion project, just your process, that your article on how your scouting process works. You've been doing that for a couple of years. I find it really fascinating how much of a deep dive you share into what your year looks like, but can you touch on kind of what inspired that?
Yeah, I've been doing my guide to scouting at The Athletic for some time now, and you're right, it's a passion project for sure. I find our readership at The Athletic, because people are paying to subscribe, our readership tends to be really diehard, sort of nerdy fan types, people who are obsessed with the game of hockey. You wouldn't pay your money to read our work if that wasn't a real passion. And I think as a result, we get readers who are really into the nitty gritty. They want to know how the sausage is made, if you will. So that's what my guide to scouting is about. I get as many questions about how I do my job, the things I look for, my process, as I do about the actual players. And so the guide to scouting is meant to sort of answer that, peel back the curtain on the step-by-step process that I take to evaluate a player, the many things that I look for and value in players in building my lists. And that way, when someone reads my guide to scouting and then reads my draft ranking, they know exactly why I'm thinking about the players the way that I am. So that's really the goal, is to sort of open it up and pull back the curtain for the reader on how I go about my job, how I watch video, how I watch a live game, the people I talk to, the sources I rely on, the video I use, all of that. And it also gives other people who want to get into sort of our line of work an opportunity to sort of know where to start, if you will.
The end of this month, obviously, the NHL draft, the final stop for you. What does that look like when you get to head to Vegas and be at the Sphere?
Oh, it's the best. I often run into people at the draft and they say, oh, this week must be so hard for you. And frankly, the draft is, it's over. The work is done. The draft is just sort of, I recap it. I do team by team grades and pick by pick analysis and winners and losers and all that stuff that fans sort of eat up at the draft. But the work is done at that point. And the draft is just an opportunity for me to sort of put a bow on a draft year. When I do my grades and sort of submit that last piece of the year on a draft class, it's always a huge feeling of just sort of pride and relief for me, honestly, to be done. And then you quickly turn the page to the next draft class. But no, it's Vegas is going to be great by all accounts. Everything I've heard, the NHL has put significant money into the production value. I think it's going to look spectacular. I think it's going to look great on TV. It's going to be great in the building. It's going to be unique. It's going to be unlike any other draft we've ever seen. That part of it, I think, is going to be exciting. It's bittersweet because it's the last centralized draft, and we're going to be moving to a different format going forward. But I think it's going to be a fitting send-off to the draft and the way that it's been done for decades, really. So I'm looking forward to getting down to Vegas and sort of just enjoying the week. The draft week is always one of my favorite weeks of the year.
We're also looking forward to that time coming up real soon here in a couple weeks. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been awesome getting to chat with you. Looking forward to this year's draft and seeing where the Anaheim Ducks are going to pick.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
And get your home cozy with Gettle Rejuvenation for just $129. We'll prep your HVAC for the season so you're ready to cheer on our Ducks. Call 866-671-9822 or visit Gettle.com/Ducks. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on Duckstream.